Hey folks, I'm Jeannie Yoon, and you're listening to Sex Talk Happy Hour, a podcast hosted by the New York City Alliance Against Sexual Assault. If you missed our trailer episode, let's catch you up real quick. We're a small nonprofit organization located in the Big Apple, and as you might have guessed from our organization name, we at the Alliance do a lot of work around gender-based violence response, prevention, and policy. This podcast is a new project, and we're really excited to bring you an amazing array of speakers who are experts and innovators in many different industries. Before we get started, we want to provide a quick self-care heads up, as we will talk about topics that might be difficult for some listeners. Our first ever episode is about the Academy Awards, or better known as the Oscars. The Oscars celebrate the year's best films, actors, producers, and directors. 2018 marks the 90th year of the Academy Awards and will be aired on March 4th this year at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC. Our guest today is the wonderful, brilliant, and witty film and television critic, Candace Frederick. A quick note, my chat with Candace was completed over the phone, so the sound quality is going to be a little different. Also, a small correction. Sometime in this episode, you'll hear someone use the term fellatio, but we meant cunnilingus. Accuracy is important. So, without further ado, here's my chat with Candace. We hope you enjoy. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Jeannie, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. Tell our audience about your amazing self.
Oh, first of all, thank you.
I am a
film, TV critic, journalist, how you describe me. And so I've been blogging for a long while. I had a blog for almost like 10 years. So recently I decided to just go strictly freelance and write for a number of publications, including Vice, Daily Beast, The Mary Sue, and I have a number of others coming up, but those are just a few places that you can find my work. I write about, like I said, film and TV, and it's often intersecting those two mediums with the political landscape, whether it be feminism or police brutality, or really interrogating and challenging and understanding how these interpretations and portrayals suit up or are paralleled in today's society.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I'm so excited about our conversation today.
me too.
It's going to be so great. All right, well, I thought we could start by breaking the ice a little bit with some light-ish Oscar-related trivia. You ready?
I have no choice but to be ready.
All right, okay, so let's do question number one. As of today, so this is before the Oscars that are going to be in like a week and a half, as of today, which actress has won more Academy Awards, Katharine Hepburn or Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep.
It's actually Katharine Hepburn.
Really? I thought
Isn't
we
that crazy?
Just won et cetera above. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So Katharine Hepburn has won 4 Oscars, but Meryl Streep has been nominated for 21, which is probably why a lot of people think it's Meryl Streep. But so far, as of today, she's only won 3, although she could potentially tie Katharine Hepburn this upcoming year if she wins for the post. So fingers crossed, Meryl, we're all rooting for you. Okay, trivia number 2. Hattie McDaniel was the first black person to win an Oscar for which film?
Gone with the Wind.
Yay, absolutely, yes, that's exactly right. So that was the 12th ever Academy Awards in 1940, which I, like, didn't realize how long ago that was. And I was doing some reading for this trivia portion, and she had to be escorted and get special permission to come into the hotel where the awards were being held because it was a no-black hotel. Reading that, I was like, oh, that really makes sense for the time, but it just, like, is crazy to read about right now.
It underscores how far we've come, but how far we still have to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. okay, cool. So you're 1 for 1. We've got 1 versus 1. Last and final question, and I'll be so impressed if you know this because I really had to dig deep in to find this one.
Oh, gosh.
Which year was the first ever nude scene on cinema depicted? So nudity.
What was the first nude scene in cinema in theaters?
Yeah, like what year was it released?
The short answer is I have no idea.
Take a guess.
Because I think I know the movie it was, but I'm trying to remember when that movie came out. Was it 1968?
It was not, although I'm curious what movie you think it was.
Oh, goodness, the one that stars Jane Fonda.
No, okay, so didn't know this, and it was a Czech film, so it was definitely not an American film, called Ecstasy,
and it featured Hedy Lamarr in 1933.
Hedy Lamarr, why didn't I think of that? Yes.
I couldn't believe it was so early. Like, 1933 is so...
Yeah.
I definitely would have guessed the 60s or 70s with, like, the sexual revolution. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that seems like a pretty good transition point to our first topic. Do you want to talk about nudity on screen?
Yes, let's do that.
All right, cool. So let's just get, like, pure unadulterated thoughts from you first. Anything you want to talk about or films you want to talk about?
Nudity on screen. I think I'm always, one of the things I'm kind of always championing, and every time I see it, I'm like, yay, because it's so, so rare, is the appearance of male frontal genitalia on either in TV or film, because I've seen so many vaginas, I've seen so many breasts on TV and film so often that I'm so desensitized to it. And even, like, it doesn't even faze me, but I know how incredibly risque and controversial Hollywood think that male nudity is. And so when they finally let one or two penises actually pop up, don't, I mean, like, no pun intended, it's like, oh my goodness, they actually let one pass through. Because it's so rare. I mean, even in, like, sex scenes, it's just, like, the men are completely clothed and the woman is stark naked. I'm just like, well, how's that going to work? Like, what kind of sex is that?
Yeah, and right. First of all, it's not realistic.
Right. I'm just like, that's not going to work out. Like, somebody's assed out. Pardon the pun.
So,
I mean, I also always just, something that immediately comes to my mind when I think about nudity, I think of the nudity double standard on screen and why that's not something that is constantly being interrogated.
Yeah, it totally is a double standard too, because, like, you watch any number of R-rated movies, you see breasts and vaginas and but you never see male frontal nudity, and it's such an interesting thing to me because they protect male genitalia so much in film.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, at the same time, like, I live in New York City. When I'm walking around the city, I see literal cartoons of penises everywhere. Like, it's everywhere on movie posters and, like, on the subway. That feels kind of, like, discordant, too, that we protect it so much on screen, but we see them everywhere else in our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I can think of, like, two films that I've seen that actually showcase male frontal nudity. So, and, like, the first one was Shame, which was rated NC-17. And it was literally, if I'm recalling correctly, I think it's just Michael Fassbender, like, walking in front of the camera. And that's it. It's 2 seconds, not even, and you're not paying attention, you'll miss it. Yeah, absolutely. It's not, like, erect or anything. You just walk by the camera and you're like, oh, okay. And that's the whole scene.
Exactly. Exactly. No, it's true. I mean, like, I can probably, and this is like a string for me to, like, count on one hand how many times I've seen a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows. I mean, I also remember in A History of Violence, great, great movie, and Maria Bello is completely naked in that movie. And it was one of those times after sex that was post an argument. So it was just, like, really, not violent, but aggressive, because it was after a major argument that led to sex. And then, like, afterwards, we just see her start naked and she's still continuing the argument. So it's very interesting, because even though it was after sex, it didn't seem sexual at that moment, because she was still mad.
Mm-hmm. And this might be a little bit of a tangent, but, like, I always see, there's so many scenes I've seen that are, like, mixed sex and violence. And not in, like, this is a rape scene or this is a sexual assault scene, but, like, I'm thinking specifically about, like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They're literally beating each other up while they're having sex. And I just think that's, like, unless you've agreed to it beforehand and you're part of a certain community, like, not say that's normative.
I think that's also why sexual violence always seemed more digestible on screen to certain audiences than regular physical violence. The thing with the portrayal of sexual violence on screen is that sex can be consensually aggressive. And so that when it's portrayed, and even though, of course, there's a difference between aggressive sex and sexual violence, I think that in the minds of certain audiences, that line blurred.
Right. Aggressive sex and sexual violence do tend to get blurred a lot in film. And that's even something we see. That's something we saw a lot in old films. This idea that rape is not really rape because eventually they'll be okay, or like eventually the person's going to be okay with it. In Gone with the Wind, like, right, we talked about that movie a few minutes ago, and that scene where he literally absolutely 100% rapes her, and then the next scene, she's, like, happy and yawning in bed, and I'm like, that's not how it goes down.
Right, right. It's really interesting, and I think we're still grappling with this female sexual oppression at the hands of men. We're still grappling with how we are portraying that and how we are interrogating that even off screen, definitely. We've done a lot of that, particularly in the last several months. I mean, I think of, is it called a Stockholm Syndrome? So I think of that particular thesis when I think of a film called Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. It's by one of my favorite directors, Pedro Almodovar. So Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down is from 1989. And again, it stars Pedro Almodovar, and Antonio Banderas is the captor. And so he kidnaps this woman, and at some point, she starts to catch feelings for him because, one, she's held hostage and she's with him for so long. It's very interesting how we often see that Stockholm Syndrome, but it's always at the detriment of the woman. That was just one example.
I hate this, like, cultural idea of just wear them down. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, be persistent, be annoying, don't take no for an answer, like, wear them down to no. And you should, like, right? Like, for me, I think about that. I don't want to date or have sex with someone that, like, I've worn down, right? Like, I want to have sex with someone who wants to have sex with me. And so when we look at movies like that, or even like The Notebook, oh God, that movie is so problematic with him legitimately like coercing her, you know what I mean? So
which are plenty, and I haven't seen a movie just because I'm like, I'm you know, I just get kind of bored with certain romance movies.
Same.
And that came out and I was just like, whatever. And it just seemed very, I didn't want to see it. But I really love the woman who plays the older version of Rachel McAdams' character.
I don't remember the film that well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Jenna Rollins, that's her name. But okay. I really love her, and so I really want to see it for her. I like Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams as well, but Jenna Rollins was an icon. But yeah, all that to say, there's a lot of rom-com and just romantic films in which there's an unrequited love story constantly.
Yeah.
And even like you take something seemingly innocuous as Saved by the Bell, and there's a number of things that are going on there. I love that show. But you might recall Screech and Lisa. Screech was enamored with Lisa the entire time.
Right.
And Lisa, who never paid him no mind, like she was not into him at all, but he constantly just was in her face. He's constantly like not doing anything particularly violent or anything that seemed terrible, but to somebody who already said no, thank you, at least 1,000 times, that he's just persistent to the point where it's just like we're all kind of intermingling, we're all supposed to be friends, but despite many times saying no, you're still in my face, you know, trying to be like the object of my affection. It's just not happening. And then to that point, she was the only person of color. Well, no, Mario Lopez, but she was the only black woman on that show, and everybody else seemed to have love interests, and then there was Lisa, who was harassed the entire series by somebody that she didn't like.
It's funny, I always think critically about comedies, whether it's television or film, and how comedies play a role in some of this stuff too. Like, I'm thinking about even Parks and Rec, right? Which is one of my most favorite shows. I love that show. And there's that like weird story arc, sorry, spoilers, where Tom Haverford is like dating Anne, right? Rashida Jones's character. And he's being persistent. And then she says, all right, you finally wore me down. I'll go on a date with you. And then it pans to that, like, individual scene where Tom Haverford is like, those are music to my ears. You wore me down. Like, those are my favorite words or something like that, which, like, is so creepy and gross. And like, especially in light of the recent story about Aziz Ansari coming out, was just like, oh, gosh. Yeah, and it's just so normalized.
Yeah, I always, you know, I'm constantly talking to my friend about this, that I just don't understand what kind of pride-swallowing behavior that you have to embody to constantly have someone say no and you still want to pursue.
Right.
Because,
exactly.
I mean, like, for me, if I actually, you know, had the balls, go up to somebody and just say, you know, hey, can we go out or whatever, just kick it to them and ask them out, and they say no, especially if we're in public, I'm never going to talk to that person again.
Right, yeah, I'm not going to show my face.
Right. My ego is so bruised at that moment that I'm like, I don't even want to be in the same room with you. This is awkward. But for guys, that feeling of just like, whatever, I'll just try again. I'm just like, but why? First of all, your ego isn't telling you not to do that. Like never mind my feelings, because obviously you don't care about that. But I mean, you don't feel like, oh my gosh, this is really embarrassing, maybe not try that again. But no, they just don't have that connection at all.
Yeah, and it's mirrored on film and TV all the time. And I believe that that's a part of where all of our socialization comes from, especially like the younger generations. If you watch a lot of TV and film, and yeah, it's an interesting thing. Speaking of balls, because that's what you said, if I had the balls to go to someone. To go back to sort of what our original topic was, one thing I wanted to talk to you about was the movie Blue Valentine and kind of like the history of its rating and why it was rated the way that it was. Do you want to say some words around that?
So I remember seeing this. I think I saw this in the movie theater, and I remember loving the movie. I still love the movie. I think everybody should have won Oscars for it. It's so good. And that was the first time for me that I had seen Ryan Gosling, because a lot of other people were introduced to him through The Notebook. For me, it was Blue Valentine.
That's a much better film.
Right. And so for me, I was just like, the scene that I can't get out of my mind, which is triggering the rating, is the facial scene. There are few instances in film where the guy goes down on the woman, and it's so risque and taboo. I'm just like, but we talk about women giving head all the time. So much so that it's in some of our favorite songs. It's like on the radio all the time. Like, I don't understand why at this point this is not something that is part of what we've already come to accept in sexual portrayals. Like, this is just another element of sex. When it happened, I was shocked only because I was just like, oh, they let another one slip through. This is the same thing as the penis thing. I was just like, oh, they let another one. Okay. It is so, so rare. Again, I can count on one hand how many times I've seen a guy go down with a woman on film.
Right.
And so, of course, they slapped it with her in C-17 rating. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is so, like, this is so, you know, taboo and just so forbidden. And I'm just like, I don't understand why. Like, we are so desensitized by women giving men blowjobs that it's in comedies and it's in, like, family movies at this point.
So
I just don't understand why, on the flip side, men giving women or men going down on women is so light years behind. Like, why is this still a protection?
It is the same act. Like,
it's literally the
same thing. And it's so interesting, like, what that says about, you know, how we still view female sexuality and how it's still so weird and taboo and restricted to portray female pleasure on screen. And so for our listeners who don't know, Blue Valentine is actually, it's rated R, but it was originally slapped with an NC-17 rating because of the scene where Ryan Gosling goes down on Michelle Williams. And fun, I don't know if I would define this as fun, but fun fact, the Motion Picture Association, when a movie depicts a man receiving oral sex, it can get a PG-13 rating, right? So think every single James Bond film ever, right? but movies that portray women receiving oral sex automatically get an R rating, which is absolutely crazy to me. And the irony about Blue Valentine, this is a piece I really wanted to talk with you about because I just think it's interesting, is that it was slashed with NC-17, and the producer of the movie, Harvey Weinstein, was the guy that had to take it to court to get it down to an R rating, which is so interesting to think about.
Yeah, given what we know
now.
I mean, the irony is undeniable. But I think I've had a lot of thoughts about Harvey, like, even before we all started talking about Harvey. I my read on him was just never, like, innocent. So it's his demeanor, it's how he presented himself, and I just thought it was all TV. But anyway, that aside, very, 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 very good businessman. So,
right.
And so very savvy, obviously knew what he was doing and how to manipulate and navigate the system for his own gain. This was just one example of that. I mean, at the end of the day, whether or not he probably received personal pleasure in the scene, if it was coming down to the matter of dollars and cents, where NC-17 means that a lot less eyeballs will get to see it, a lot less theaters will show it, and that's a lot less money in his pocket. And at the end of the day,
right,
he will turn this into G-rated if he had to.
Right. Yeah, no kidding.
And so at the end of the day, he was a businessman first and foremost. So yes, the irony is undeniable, but also it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, actually, when you phrase it that way, that makes a lot more sense, because I don't think anything about that decision was altruistic or, like,
mm-mm,
feminist.
Mm-mm. No, not at all. Not at all.
So yeah, I just thought that was such an, when I was looking up stuff to talk about for our episode today, I was just like, wow, this is fascinating. I never knew this. And anyway, double standards exist in film, folks, apparently.
Yes. Continue to.
Yeah. One of the other things we had talked about, maybe talking about, was the use of violence as a tool for quote unquote empowerment of female characters in film. You had mentioned I Spit on Your Grave. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I Spit on Your Grave is a film, I think, from 1970s. It was remade in more recent years, in the earlier 2000s, but it was in the mid-70s that it first came about. And I was going to look up whether it was NC-17. It was definitely not NC-17, but it was a movie that basically follows one woman. She is gang raped early on in the movie and the gang rape is all shown. It seemed to go on for like a half an hour. It's probably 10 minutes.
That's still long. That's still a long time.
Right. It is because it's multiple guys and it's just terrible. So throughout the rest of the film, she hunts them down, which doesn't take long in the film, and she slowly but steadily tortures all of them in very similar but different ways and very graphic. I mean, the whole film is extraordinarily graphic, and particularly for the fact that it came out in the 70s, and she's the only woman, if I recall, surrounded by men. And with that earlier event that happens to her, she turns into this weapon. Her body becomes a weapon. And she tortures them. I mean, like, very, very graphic. But I see this tool often in movies. I mean, this is a movie directed by Meir Zarchi, who is an Israeli director and a man. And so we see a lot of these movies, including I Spit on Your Grave, that are directed, that have this through the male gaze. So I think a lot of men can only really understand and only fully write and portray these women characters if they can give them something that they are familiar with: violence against women, assertion against women, oppression against women. They have to give them things that they understand in order to understand a woman's strength. And that's the gateway in which they're able to show a woman's progression. I mean, I love to see these revenge thrillers. I've seen many, many, many of them. And I love to see a woman get in a way some sort of peace or justice or revenge or just to be seen at all. So I like that idea. And I would like to think that the intention just to see them be stricken and just so abused, that not, I would like to think that that's not something that was the full intent. Maybe it was, but I do find it interesting that that is a constant theme that we see even today. I mean, I just talked about a movie from 1978, but even today with Red Sparrow, which is coming out in theaters next Friday, same type of thing. I mean, this is a woman who, and that woman is played by Jennifer Lawrence. The movie is directed by Frances Lawrence. So again, female director, and it's definitely through his gaze, and the male gaze is extremely prominent in that movie. And most of these movies, same thing with Quentin Tarantino and Kill Bill and Uma Thurman. And so there's this recurring thing where we have to kind of put them through the ringer in order for them to find their own strength. Whereas most of the women I know who are strong, and not, you know, vengeful or spiteful or torturous, they are just built that way. they don't have to really be, they don't have to hit rock bottom where their strength is essentially stripped from them in order for them to identify with it. They just can navigate the world that way without that impetus.
I so appreciate everything you just said, because I see this trope in films all the time, right? Like from Girl with a Dragon Tattoo to Kill Bill, or movies like Monster or Enough.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I Spit on Your Grave, which is the film that you were talking about earlier, is I actually had never thought about the fact that all of these films are directed by men. And so when you said that, I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. Because if a man were to be beaten, raped, sexually assaulted, their recourse, or what they think their recourse would be to get revenge, would be to do unto others the way that was undue, you know, like it would be a violent response. And that's where we get these characters like, you know, the woman in Kill Bill and Enough and all these films. So I've never thought about that before, that like, of course that's the trope, because that's how men think they would respond to it. And I'm like kind of floored right now.
Well, I mean, even like in I had actually wrote a piece for Vice about this a couple of months ago that examined how we portray male victims in film. First of all, we very, very rarely have them, which is interesting considering while it's not getting the same profile that it is for female victims, but when I say male high profile or celebrity male victims, I think of people like Terry Crews, and I think of Today was just released with Brendan Fraser. And so, you know, while we hear about these stories, they are nowhere near in comparison to the amount of scrutiny that we give female victims. They are just like, well, you know, they're almost, I don't understand really why they are being really kind of swept under the rug. But the Terry Crews thing is infuriating. This Brendan Fraser thing seems infuriating. I don't know. I mean, Terry Crews has been really outspoken and really eloquent about how we deal with masculinity on screen. And my piece was really about exploring how, even in the case of Horrible Bosses, to your point, where these portrayals, you know, these sexual portrayals are often in comedies. You know, so Horrible Bosses, which I love. So we see Charlie Day, who is obviously being sexually harassed on the regular by his superior, his female superior, played by Jennifer Aniston, and it's comical. It's like, because you're not really supposed to take that seriously, but with women, you're supposed to take it seriously. With men, you're not supposed to take it seriously. Like, it's funny, and we should all laugh at it.
I'm so glad you said that, because I actually talk about this a lot in my work, is how portrayals of, like, sexual violence against men in film and television almost always is a comedy. Like, I think about movies like Get Him to the Greek, and Jonah Hill's at a party, and he's kind of flirting with this woman, and he's like, oh my gosh, like, she seems really into me, and it's this kind of, like, thing, and she clearly wants to have sex, and then she pulls out this giant dildo, and he is like, no, absolutely not, and she does it anyway. And I, like, mm-hmm. watched this scene, and I'm like, this isn't funny, but it was written mm-hmm. in a way that was supposed to be funny. You see it in The Hangover. It's just, yep. it's always portrayed as funny. And so, like, of course male survivors are not coming forward because, I mean, they're being told by their friends and media that, like, oh, it's not actually that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I call it kind of the turkey baster effect, where we see a lot of women, and this is almost exclusively in comedies, which is basically tricking the guy into thinking you're using contraception or using breast control pills. Basically, the woman is stealing the guy's sperm, which is so insane, but it's mm-hmm. obviously so prevalent that this must be a thing somewhere. But I mean, because I've never experienced, I can't even think to do something like that.
Yeah.
Right. But it's so common that it's just right. like, oh, you know, I mean, it's definitely a discussion point in whatever, if it's a show or film, but it's still brushed over, like, okay, well, now we have this baby and you have to take care of it. Yeah, but not really, because it's very manipulative. And
it is.
Also,
yeah.
It's also just like, it's normalizing and bringing us to accept something that should not be accepted because of the woman wants something that the guy does not, but that's also still wrong, you know?
Right. Well, and that's the interesting thing, because, like, if you were to flip it, right? Like, if a man is having sex with a woman in the dark and he has mm-hmm. a condom on and she knows he has a condom on and then he takes it off and doesn't tell her about it, that is absolutely a form of sexual violence. It's like there's a name for it now. It's called delfing. And mm-hmm. like, of course it can go the other way. So it's such a, the way we see the exact same act, and depending on who the victim is, it's either seen as comedic or a very serious drama thing. So that's an interesting point to think about, because especially with the Oscars coming up, you know, there are always films that have violence or sexual assault as a core theme to a lot of films. And how do we do that responsibly
mm-hmm.
as yeah, filmmakers yeah. and producers and actors and consumers of those films? Yeah, it's just definitely something to think about.
Yeah, so a film that I have hated since day one is Phantom Thread.
I have not seen that.
Oh, gosh, it's so exasperating. It's just, again, this is written by a man, directed by a man, and I find the film in general so triggering. So it's basically about a fashion designer played by Daniel Day-Lewis. He's intentionally snotty, intentionally, like, just stuck up. He is very much asserting his male power just constantly. His right-hand man is actually a woman, Cyril. She's inexplicably enamored with him, enamored by his entitlement, enamored by his authority over her, which I find all very, very, very problematic. She is then the pursuer, just like she wants to try to change him, which is another thing that we see often in film. Women who want to change a guy who is obviously wrong for them, but they want to try to change him in order for them to like them back, even though it's obviously,
mm-hmm.
even though the guy is not the right guy and you won him over, so to speak. Why do you have to go through such great lengths to get this guy to appreciate you for what you're worth? And that's what this
right.
has done, and you know?
Isn't that like the equivalent of like wearing someone down? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly, exactly. This is just another example of that unrequited love that is not always healthy to see, but is also so normalized.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's, it's kind of gendered too, right? Because when you think mm-hmm. about in film and television, when women are the ones that are obsessed or really like just can't get over this guy, and it's always heterosexual, so like let's acknowledge yeah. that. Women are always portrayed as crazy. And when men do it in film to women, it's romantic. Like, oh, he loves you so much, he's going to stalk you. And that's so problematic. But, like,
yeah, no, it's true. I mean, it's such a good point, because I was thinking when you brought that up, I was thinking of Fatal Attraction, which is one of my favorite movies of all
mm-hmm.
time. The guy who ends up being the victim, I mean, he ends up being portrayed as a victim, and in some elements he is. So I want to mm-hmm. make that a point. But
right.
also understand that you also pursued a woman despite the fact that you were with somebody.
Yeah, and like on the other side of things, right, when you, and I keep coming back to this movie, but like The Notebook, but there's him pursuing her and not taking no for an answer and being super manipulative is seen as like, oh, like romantic. And so there's like such a gendered double standard there. It's always interesting to see, like, they're like horror films created on that trope, right? Like, what was that movie, Swim Fan, from like the early 2000s or something? And the whole story is this girl is obsessed with him and won't let things go. And she's quote unquote crazy, or she's unhinged, or, you know, unstable, or whatever it is. And it's him being the victim. And of course he is, you know, I'm not saying that he's not in that film, but when men do it to women in film, it's like, oh, that's just like how men are. They are not taught to say no. You're not supposed to take no for an answer. You just keep trying and you come up with creative ways till you get a yes. Anyway, that's like my opinion.
No, it's so true though. I mean, like, let's really talk about consent then. The woman doesn't really have that authority, but the guy always does. When we talk about pursuing in general, pursuing somebody who already said no to you is something that is very differently portrayed per gender.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it is. And that's interesting to see where the double standards show up in film, because they're everywhere. Like from nudity to oral sex and all that stuff, it just shows up in so many different ways. But I did want to ask, or like see if you wanted to talk a little bit about what I call slacktivism, which is like people showing up wearing black dresses or carrying a white rose.
When we talk about female empowerment, when we talk about solidarity, when we talk about being allies, let's really put our money where our mouth is. And when I say let's, I mean people who actually have the money to do so.
So I
mean all of them. All of those people in Hollywood have more than the means to do so. I am just, because I'm embedded in these conversations constantly, I just need to know when the results are going to actually show themselves, because they haven't yet. I love that we're having these conversations and we can talk about it too. We're blue in the face. Also, these things are constantly happening regularly. What are we doing to actually alleviate this issue? So I like that the decision to wear a color in solidarity with one another on the red carpet happened because it triggered the question, you know, what does it mean to you? If you're wearing black, this means that this is something that means something to you, and why? So I like that it's forcing a conversation that might be uncomfortable for certain people. Like that. You know, honestly, when I heard that the men were going to wear black as well, Jeannie, the men wear black every year. like I don't understand how that was anything. And it's so crazy because I was
green.
I'm just like, if you're going to, like, I don't know, wear, like, a sailor suit or something. Wear something that you wouldn't normally wear. I don't know. But, like, that just seemed like the least amount of effort to do the biggest amount of things, you know? And it really just called you to actually do nothing, wear the exact same suit that you wore the previous year and be cool. And I love that women are coming around and having this conversation. I do think that it could be a lot more inclusive when we talk about women across cultures, also transgender women as well. Like, that needs to be more represented, because when we talk about oppression, when we talk about rights being stripped and pay gap and a lot of the things that we're constantly talking about in the Time's Up and the Me Too movement, people don't understand how that is even worse for people of color and for transgender women. And to not have that representation or have less of a representation within these movements has been really detrimental. Women are constantly having, and this is kind of coming full circle when we were talking about revenge thrillers, and this is another circumstance where women are coming together to save their own lives, because men have not felt moved to do that. They haven't put the effort forth to actually, one, acknowledge that this is partially their fault, two, that there still seems to be an understanding that this is a woman's movement that is for women, not something that is strictly about women. It is important to have these male allies. And so when you do the very bare minimum to wear the same suit that you wore last year in solidarity is something that is enraging to me. Like, I can't imagine why you feel good about that when you should
right.
be coming. If there's a Time's Up for women, actually just get involved with Time's Up, you know? It doesn't
yeah.
actually have to be the woman's face. It could be, you know, a man stepping up and being an ally and saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. And I want to also credit that there are men, very, very few, who have really, really done the work to be very vocal and created their own platforms for this. But there is still countless other guys who can be doing this, who can be using their platform in such a way, and who are not.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more, because it's, I think, the greatest lie that has ever been told to us is that violence against women or violence against non-cis men is a women's issue or a feminine issue, when the vast yeah. majority of people who are committing these crimes are male identified. And the other thing that I think we don't talk about enough is that this hurts men, right? Like, we talk about the fact that, of course, the patriarchy hurts women, but the patriarchy hurts men. I want any man who is listening to this, I want you to get together with your other friends and, like, have a real conversation about what you feel insecure about and what things are driving you crazy at work. And that would just be so amazing to me, because, like, if we can address whatever internal anger and pain men feel that is a result of the patriarchy, maybe we can actually start using men and getting men involved in preventing violence against women, trans and cis, and gender nonconforming. So anyway, that's my sort of
no
there.
I'm kind of chuckling only because I'm just like, I never even considered that guys should do that. But that is a really good meeting place. So that's a really, really great point that you brought up. Getting back to, like, my action points, like, you need to, like, come from that conversation and say, this is what I'm going to do individually to help move this movement along.
So I think we need to cut ourselves off, because otherwise I think you and I could talk about this for literal days.
yes.
Well, Candace, thank you so, so much for your time and your thoughts on all of this. I've had so much fun talking with you. I want to give our audience members a chance to hear more about how they can follow you and, like, your work. So do you want to plug some of your social media stuff?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Real Talker. It's RealTalker. In that profile, you will see a link to my online portfolio, where you'll see all of my recent articles, including the ones I've mentioned from Vice and Daily Beast, and a slew of other articles that I have written. Instagram, I'm at Candace.Frederick37. That's a way to engage with me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Candace.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Special thanks to the staff of the Alliance for supporting this project and for making it happen. If you, yes you, like this episode, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes or Google Play Music. That's how more people are going to find us. And tell your friends. We're excited to bring you a bunch of conversations just like this. Let us know what you think, or let us know what you want to hear about for future episodes. You can do so by following us on Instagram at NYC Alliance, that's at NYCALLIANCE, or tweet at us at NYCAASA. And make sure you use our hashtag, #SexTalkHappyHour, all one word. Thanks all, have a great day, thanks for listening.